This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. Of course, I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio is Philip C. Happy Junior Friday. It is Thursday, the 18th of March, and it's 6 a.m. in the morning. And for those who remember, today is actually the one-year anniversary of the MCO. Remember, the first lockdown was on 18th of March, and it's 1 year has literally passed in a flash. We have adapted to the new normal. We are used to staying at home, keeping physical distance, you know, giving up a lot of the things that we had taken for granted, like coming to work, for example.
I hope next year's anniversary will be a bit better. We'll be in a more celebratory mode.
Yeah, hopefully by then we would have achieved some level of herd immunity, would have gone back to our normal lives. We can hug people again, have dinner parties without thinking about it too much.
Enough of the fist bumps. Yeah. Enough of that, I think.
For me, of course, the dream is to be able to go on a holiday. And I'm not even ambitious. I'm just looking forward to a chuti chuti Malaysia.
I have my list already. Mulukes, you know, Sabah, Langkawi, it's all on my list,
all
right?
On
but
your
I have
list.
To do East Coast before monsoon season.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, who knows? We've all kind of adapted to it, which is kind of shows how as human beings we are so good at just getting on with it. I mean, I think we all paid a price, and some people paid a greater price than others. Of course, some people lost their jobs. My heart goes out to them. Some have had severe pay cuts also. It's terrible. Children have been stuck at home. 1 year of schooling disappeared. But the human, the ability of the human to just carry on.
And to persevere,
and
right?
And to persevere is something I think we should be kind of marvel at a little bit. But what do we have this morning?
Well, before that, we should celebrate your work anniversary.
Oh, no.
2 years.
Yeah, I survived, guys.
730 days. Well done.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening in. Thank you for listening to The Morning Run. And also thank you for the team, for the Morning Run team that gets the show ready every day.
And drives her insane.
And drives me insane. But in the meantime, what do we have?
Well, we're going to talk about why more parents are actually contemplating homeschooling.
Ah, yes, it is true. I have heard more and more about it. And maybe COVID-19 accelerated what was already a trend.
It seems to be the case across the developed countries. I presume also in Malaysia.
Yes, and I'll be talking about the imposter syndrome. Is this a dig at me though, Phil?
Fake it till you make it. That's what I say.
Me, I think. But as usual, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few moments. But here's Superstition by Stevie Wonder. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Superstition by Stevie Wonder. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning and joined by Philip C. It's just gone past, 6:07 in the morning. It's Thursday, the 18th of March. And like we just mentioned earlier, 1 year anniversary of our MCO, the first time we were put in a lockdown. I think, you know, it was a great shock to all of us. I had never imagined living through something like that.
Well, congratulations for thriving and surviving, I say.
I think congratulations to all of us. We have all learned to adapt, right? One way or another. Some, of course, have come out of this a little bit, you know, I think actually in a quite good shape. You know, it has given us some of us some time to think about the important things in life. Refocus, reset. But in the meantime, we are looking at this article on the BBC, and it's entitled Imposter Syndrome, The Hidden Upside of the Imposter Syndrome. Now, Philip, you chose this story as usual. Oh, you know, and it's a fascinating one because when I read this, I thought, you know, I can somewhat relate. You know, when you're put into a job or position which you are in your mind not trained for, not qualified for, not experienced, you feel, oh my goodness, I'm such a fake, right? Can I do it? You know, do I have to mix stuff up?
Xiaoning, you're not alone. 70% of people have had feelings of imposter syndrome.
All their working lives,
throughout
I presume.
Their whole working life. So it's quite a common experience, especially if you're new to a job. If you are learning a new skill, for sure you will feel this insecurity. Mm. And the issue is that we've always felt it was a debilitating syndrome. But this study by MIT is saying, actually, it's a plus, it's a benefit.
Okay. So This is interesting because you're right. I think, HR culture tells you, or at least you're made to believe that if you feel inadequate, then you're not right for the job, right? Mm. That you're not good enough.
You have to have confidence.
Yeah, you know it all. Don't worry. You know, yeah. Fake it till you make it. Don't worry. But actually, when I think about it, it's true. Because if you feel inadequate, or you have questions about your ability, maybe that is the great motivator for you to improve. Because at the bottom of it all, or deep down inside, actually not that deep, you probably know you can do better. And the knowing that you can do better pushes you ahead. And I think that's true. When I think about myself too, there were many moments where I thought, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to die. What am I going to do? Yeah. And that constant questioning helps. But I want to ask the important question. At what point do you need to give it up and not let it be a paralysis?
I think it should never be a paralysis. You should just keep on with it. I think the key point you made is that you are more open to feedback. Mm. Your senses are heightened. You're learning throughout the process. And don't we want to keep on doing that?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, we are always on this journey of growing and learning. So perhaps we will always have this imposter syndrome feeling, right? And if you start feeling like, oh, this is a bit, you know, it's like, you can close your eyes and just do it without a, you know, trace of doubt or worry.
Mm.
Perhaps it's time to actually shift and try a different career opportunity as well.
Yeah, it could be two things. One of which you are actually just, you know, fed up, tired, you know, enough. You're not motivated anymore because you don't question yourself. Or maybe you truly are one of those characters, just a bit, you know, overconfident kind of Joe, and that along the way you don't realize that you're making mistakes or you're not actually improving anymore. Yeah.
And it's not only an internal reflection, it's being shown in the results.
Mm.
Bosses were even saying that, you know, and they did this study, right, in investment management firm where...
Oh, my ex-life.
I know. And they correlated those who had imposter thoughts versus how they performed in their job. And there was a very strong correlation. That actually those who had higher feelings of imposter syndrome actually performed better in their job, were perceived to be more collaborative, easier to work with, team players, someone who you would want to get along and work with more.
Which is kind of strange because when I look at, and maybe it's not fair to generalize, but in the world of finance, it's always the alpha male or the alpha female, right, who seems to be overly confident, knows every little thing, moves with gusto, doesn't question himself or herself. So is that really the best kind of personality?
I suspect, you know, especially if you're entering financial markets, which is super volatile and you're entering uncharted territory, I would want someone who's always questioning.
Okay, so...
I would always want someone who's thinking and rethinking their views and perceptions, right? The question here is that, does it stop you from execution? Does it paralyze you is the most important thing. Or does it drive you to drive for greater progress? And Brené Brown always said this, right? Vulnerability requires courage.
Yes. So I think the key thing is to have that imposter syndrome while you're thinking about it, while you're analyzing all the things before you make the decision. But maybe once you've made the decision, to have that conviction and then just proceed. And then your imposter syndrome comes back on when you look back and do the postmortem with the analysis.
Correct.
Otherwise, nothing will happen, right? Because you'll just be paralyzed by fear and there'll be no action whatsoever.
Absolutely. And try not to do it alone. You know, I recognize that other people are also feeling insecure. So reach out to someone and say, hey, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And we do that in BFM. If we don't know something, we're like, hey, Shani, what do you think?
We do that every day. That's our normal mantra, our modus operandi. But let us know what you think. Do you feel that you're an imposter? And if you do, it's not a bad thing, by the way.
It's okay.
So WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Tainted Love by Duffy, a very cool song. It is 6:18 in the morning, Thursday, the 18th of March. And we have this rather interesting article. It's all about the new normal in this post-COVID world. And it's about homeschooling. And it's from your favorite magazine, right?
Yes, The Economist.
It's actually one of my favorites too, I have to say.
I love it. So insightful.
Makes
me smarter. I feel smart after I read it.
Just flipping the pages magazine. Makes you feel smarter, right? Yeah. When it arrives in your post box on Sunday.
The quality of the paper is like, oh, I feel so smart already. My IQ just went up 5 points.
What I find fascinating is one of the few magazines where there's still no byline. You don't know who wrote it, right?
Although if you listen to the podcast,
yeah, you do,
you will hear the names, right?
But as a, it's like a very old school tradition kind of thing. But they are, they've, their article is Kitchen Table Classroom COVID-19 has persuaded some parents that homeschooling is better.
It is the rage. If you look at the stats, right? In the UK, 40% increase in homeschooling. Pew Research in America said before COVID, only 3% of children were doing homeschooling. Now it's more than doubled at 7%.
I think this is something that was already there, if you ask me. It's not like something that happened overnight and people like, oh, okay, you know, COVID-19, I gotta keep my kids at home. And then suddenly they all got inspired to do homeschooling. I think the roots of it, the foundations of it were already existing. Partially because people have different ways of thinking of education or their views of education. Rewind back to our time, Philip, when we were growing up. It was just like, Sekolah, and there was the sekolah, and there was no alternative. There really, literally was hardly any alternative.
Yeah, I think also there's also been a conversation, because I used to teach Sunday school, that the teacher isn't necessarily the sole educator. The parent also has an important responsibility in educating the kid. So there's a conversation shifting a lot to say, hey, also parents have to take on that responsibility. And because of that, I think many parents are, you know, taking it on themselves. I have a lot of concerns on it, but I also see so many merits to it. You see the cases, especially for kids with special needs or children with a bit more different learning abilities, then where the parents say, look, I think they cannot just keep with the pace and cope, so let's just bring them home to educate them.
Yeah, there is some logic to it. I mean, as like you say, especially if your kids have some issues, or they're just the kind where maybe school is very scary for them. You know, socialization is not always the easiest for some children, right? Or the ability to mix around. And or maybe they're just, I won't say they're slow, but maybe that's not a fair word. Maybe they're learning
at a different pace.
Yeah, at a different pace.
Yeah.
But at the same time, okay, I'll play the devil's advocate and try to remember my school days. long time 60 ago.
60 years ago.
Not that long ago. But I love school. I love the idea of socializing with my friends. And you learn the code of conduct, the jungle war, or whatever you want to call it, right? How you should mix with different people of different, you know, and how you kind of negotiate your way through life. That foundation, that EQ that you build up was from day one at kindergarten. And along the way, you pick it up. Do you still have that when you're homeschooling though? I mean, and let's define homeschooling here. This is really where it's like you, maybe a sibling, and your parents. There's, you know, is it the same? The family nucleus is very different from society.
It's true. This was the question I had with a lot of my friends and colleagues who are doing homeschooling. How do you ensure social interactions are in place? And their defense is, look, yes, I do the schooling, but I also make sure they do other activities outside, like, you know, within the condo, they're interacting with other people. But I said, well, that's also, I think that's just not enough, right? You need more, because in school, the interaction is like full on hardcore.
And your parents are not there to bail you out.
That's right.
And that's very important, right? Because you, if you get into a fight, you get into a quarrel, you kids sort it out. You don't know, your parents aren't there watching you. Okay?
I'm guilty for that. My mom has bailed me out before in school. She came into class at standard 3 claiming she was CIA to a student who, for, to a child who was going to bully me, and said, look, don't bully my son because I'm from the CIA and I can lock you up in jail.
Okay.
That's not the point.
But the poor kid, I don't know whether he's suffering trauma from this until today. By the way, if you're out there, Mrs. C wasn't a CIA agent. Just so you know, okay?
But I turned out better for that.
Okay. But that's the thing. Okay, so there are two aspects to this. There's the education aspect of homeschooling. Then there's the socialization aspect of it.
Yes.
So let's spend a bit of time on the education. Now, they say that it's better because you can kind of tailor make the curriculum to your child, and your child will have a maybe even better well-rounded kind of
and
education.
And the digital tools available to assist the parents.
Rather than a very narrow aspect. But I have two things about it, one of which is, for me, I don't know, as a parent, I'm not a parent, I'll say upfront, I don't really have the confidence to teach my child. Do I know enough to do it? And if I take the child down the wrong path or teach him the wrong thing or her the wrong thing, alamak, you know, it's my fault, right?
That's so imposter syndrome.
Yeah, but you, I cannot remember my algebra.
Yes,
so imagine teaching a child algebra.
I share that same concern. For me, it's not maths because I think I can teach my kids maths. It's Bahasa. My God. I nearly failed my Bahasa. So imagine me teaching Bahasa to the kid. God help her.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking, okay, maybe you can do this to like primary six. Yeah. But beyond, right? And I've seen the new textbooks. I'm like, ayoy, I don't know how to do this. How am I expected to help the child? Yeah. That's one. So there's the education to it. And then the other thing which we touched upon, which is the interaction, the socialization. But I do know homeschooling parents are actually very innovative. They get together. They communicate online, and pre-COVID, I know they hang out. All the homeschool kids hang out together. Yep. The parents exchange notes. There is syllabus you can buy from overseas to guide your child in terms of a structure, because I think you still need structure, right? You can't be like sitting in your pajamas whole day, the kid doing nothing. That's not homeschooling either.
It's like, okay, let's just watch videos instead. I do worry about the parents particularly, because if they're now transitioning to homeschooling, for those who need dual income, how will the other parent transition over? And especially if organizations and the companies now say, okay, we no longer work from home but work from office. The struggle and challenge where you actually had the kids going through homeschooling and then now you're forced to rethink your solutions. I'm also wondering how that works, and where will the government's role play in facilitating or actually clamping down on homeschooling? That's really a question in my mind.
But I wonder whether if you're a parent listening in and you're trying homeschooling, tell us, has it been a very stressful period for you? Have you had to adapt? Or have you actually enjoyed the whole process and you have actually seen your child grow, not just academically, but in so many other ways? And I'm sure there are. As usual, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin. And to take us there is this song, Ain't It a Sin by Charles Bradley. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Wong Xiaoning, together with Philip C. And of course, this is The Morning Run. And that was California by Phantom Planet.
Take me to California now.
I'm not even so ambitious.
ASAP. Philip,
I don't even mind if I can get to Port Dixon, which at this moment, we aren't allowed to go. Anyway, it's just gone past.
Standards have dropped, huh?
It's not standards.
Standards have changed.
Standards have changed. And it would be nice just to breathe some sea air and not be stuck in KL. But the rules are the rules and we have to keep to them, and I understand why. So be it. But in the meantime, it's just gone past 6:39 in the morning. It's Thursday, the 18th of March. And, you know, let's talk about a country where I would actually really like to go to, and that is India.
Amazing place. Love it.
Yeah, I love it too. The chaos, the mess, the smells. It's so exciting, actually, if you ask me.
But the architecture is incredible. If you go north of India, Jaipur, New Delhi, Taj Mahal, amazing. Agra.
Yeah, and the food is, I can't even describe
second
it.
Second to none.
Second to none. But in the meantime, Bloomberg has reported that the top Indian government officials are debating whether to try to zero out greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, a task that will require overhauling its coal-dependent economy. So 2047 target is being considered, they say, to mark the centenary of India's independence from British rule. Now, India is the world's third biggest emitter and has come under pressure to make a net zero pledge ahead of the global climate talks in Scotland this year. But I'm amazed because I've been to India and I can tell you upfront, the pollution there is really bad.
You know, even with that being very bad, it is a distant third, because the data is showing China has 28% of global emissions, then followed by the United States at 15%, and then India is only at 7%.
Okay.
So it's quite a distant third. And I guess it's because the economy is not as developed as China.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you're right, it's very coal dependent. It is smog heavy.
It's very smog
heavy.
It's
so terrible in New Delhi that they have to use alternate vehicle number plates, odd numbers and even numbers to
especially,
make it work.
I think, if I'm not wrong, when you go in the months of January, January, February, December, the whole city is caught in some sort of smog.
Yeah.
A bit like what China experiences, to be fair. I've been in China also during that period. And I always wondered why the sun was orange. And actually, it's because of the pollution.
Right.
It's the same in India. But I think what is important is that governments are having this conversation and taking this maybe post-COVID world to think about their environment and the how are we going to overcome this? Because face it, you know, let's face it, it is going to come back and haunt us if we do nothing about it.
It is funny because China has set a net zero target of 2060. So I think India wants to best them and do it 10 years ahead to 2050. They were kind of trying to align it with the centenary of independence from the British.
Hey, this is one competition I thoroughly encouraged. Yeah. So please, yeah. Global leaders, if you're listening in to BFM, by all means, get to the top. Whoever, get to zero. I don't really care whoever it is, how fast, just do it. Because, you know, as the biggest global economies, there needs to be a concerted effort towards getting zero Absolutely. Emissions. And it's something that we should also address in Malaysia.
Yep.
If we're not careful, we will also face environmental degradation. And we're already seeing that now.
And it's a global issue. So you can't just take a local approach to this solution.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that we signed up to the Paris Climate Agreement, but we need to definitely do more. But moving on to US, because US President Joe Biden, he had a little TV interview with ABC, and it was very wide-ranging. And he said his message to, you know, a few messages. He said his message to migrants was to not come to the border. He said to about the New York governor, Andrew Cuomo, should resign if the allegations were true about the sexual harassment. And I think more interestingly, in terms of the geopolitics, he told ABC, the news channel, that he agreed Russian President Vladimir Putin was a killer and should actually pay a price for interfering in the US elections.
Those are very strong words, which you've not heard from the US administration for a very long time on Russia.
Mm.
And the question really is...
Because Trump and Putin were BFFs.
Yeah, relatively bros. Good. In good relationship, right? So this is really a turnabout. And the challenge that Joe Biden has to grapple with is that he has many diplomatic fronts to sort out. He's got to sort out this issue with Russia. At the same time, in Saudi Arabia, he has already made it clear to Saudi Arabia's king that things will have to change. He's having to have tough decisions whether to withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan. And let's not forget China, where his Secretary of State is going to meet Chinese diplomats in Alaska this coming week. And there are a lot of ongoing tensions there. So how he's going to juggle, prioritize, pick his friends, decide which battles to fight, which ones to maybe just take a bit of a colder stance, very important, tough act, I think, to do.
Yeah, for sure. And in related news to US-China, US has actually added 14 Chinese lawmakers, including a member of the Communist Party's ruling Politburo to a blacklist under the Hong Kong Autonomy Act. So, looks like on one stage they want to be a little bit warmer, but on the other hand, they're not exactly letting go of this pedal on human rights and democracy, right, in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I think there's a lot also of conversation where the Hong Kong lawmakers have a strong bipartisan support in the US. I think the Republican group and senators are also very supportive of the actions there.
But let us know what you think. As usual, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll be taking a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Drop the Pilot by Joe Armour Trading. It is now 6:50 in the morning, Thursday, the 18th of March. And as usual, during this period, we're looking at the headlines in front of us. And I've got the Edge CEO morning brief. And, you know, there are two articles I want to highlight here. But first, I think the Edge did a very interesting piece on what has happened in the year since MCO was announced. Because, like, we kept talking about it, right? It's a 1-year anniversary. Mm. So, unfortunately, worldwide, just some sobering numbers, 119.96 million people have contracted COVID-19. Total deaths, 2.66 million. Total number of vaccinations so far, 326.86 million. And if we bring it home to Malaysia, we've had 327,253 cases. Currently, there are 15,075 active ones. Total recoveries, of course, good news, 310,958. Not such good news. Total deaths for us, 1,220.
Sobering statistics. Although I think we are seeing an improvement in the cases drop. Although yesterday it did tick up a bit to 1,200 plus, I believe.
Yeah, and total vaccinations so far as of March 16, 346,508. Mm. So we are, I think globally, everyone's making progress in terms of the vaccination rollout. But when you look at our lives, right, what big changes have we had to make? And we actually, as a country, I would say, have done pretty well. Some countries haven't done so well. Look at America, right? The world's richest country. The death rate there is alarming. More people there have died than those died in World War I and World War II, for example.
That's right. And what's even said is I hear that in Europe, because they can't get the vaccination programs as fast as the US and UK, they're worried about a third wave.
Yeah. Italy is going to go into another series of lockdowns as they approach Easter. And the cases are also rising in Germany. So it's just a sobering reminder that, yes, there is some optimism out there because there are vaccines, but it's not over. We have still a long way to go. So we still have to keep up those SOPs. And yes, lockdown fatigue is real, but unfortunately, we just have to make these steps every day, these baby steps towards progress.
Just hang in there.
Yeah. But a little bit of good news, maybe not for us, Philip, because we're not those that are going to enjoy this, but The Edge has this interesting article on rich people.
What? Why am I not on the list?
Well, it's entitled Malaysia's Richest Tycoons and the Billions in Dividends They Earn in the Final Quarter of 2020.
I want to guess who is... I just want to know, who do you think earned the most dividend?
Well, according to The Edge, the biggest winner is Tan Sri Teh Hong Piao, excuse me, of Public Bank fame. He had total dividends received of only 668 million.
Cheap change, man.
Yeah, small change.
Although the glove makers, I think the glove billionaires also got away with quite a nice hefty payout as well.
Yeah, so there is the Hatta Lega Kwan family. They received 162 million ringgit. Banker Financial, of course, how should I put him? Conglomerate boss, because he owns banks, he owns steel companies, cement, property. Tan Sri Kwek Leng Chan, he also received close to 300 million in dividends. Robert Kwok, Malaysia's richest man, received 274 million ringgit. But that's just only his Malaysian assets, by the way. I think if you include whatever he has in Hong Kong from the Kerry Group and Wilma, the figure will be much, much larger.
You forgot Lim Wee Chai of Top Glove, 460 million.
Okay.
He probably used that to do the buybacks.
But at the end of the day, I mean, okay, you know, this is like... I suppose sobering news for us mere mortals.
Well, shifting from the billionaires to, I think, the package announced yesterday, the Prime Minister Pemerkasa, I really wonder whether there are any more P-related packages. You've had Prihatin, Penjana, Prihatin, Permai, and now Pemerkasa. What's the next P? You know, everyone's go figure. But this was a relatively, on the surface, large package, 20 billion ringgit, 20 initiatives. The Edge actually does summarize some of the initiatives, although a lot seem to be extensions and repetitions. The big ones, I believe, are an additional 2 billion for the immunization program, additional 2.5 for small infrastructure works. And I love the wordplay, Tekun Postpreneur, in an initiative to introduce for delivery drivers with funding of 20,000 ringgit for vehicle repairs and 50,000 ringgit. I wonder when they'll butcher the next preneur.
But we will be discussing this in greater detail as to perhaps the rationale behind it, because the economy is recovering. Who stands to benefit? And also, of course, the million-dollar question, can the government afford this headline, I want to say headline, 20 billion stimulus package? And that will be later on this morning at 7:45 with Juwita Muhammad from ISIS. So do tune in. I think we will be asking her all the interesting questions about this. But, you know, at the same time, there's also... news in the Star, which is offences in three categories, fines for violating pandemic SOPs to be detailed, published online. I think there's clarity in terms of, you know, what is the categorization, because there's severity of that. And it's also something we will be discussing later on in the morning, and that's going to be happening at 8:30. So do tune in. And that's with Andrew Koo, who is a lawyer.
Yeah, I think this might be a backlash, I think, due to the high fines that were initially imposed. So I do sense it's a bit of a backtracking, putting a bit more caveats and exceptions in place, no?
Yeah, I mean, the law has to be seen being proportionate, right? I think that's very important. But as usual, do let us know what you think. If you have any feedback or any questions, you can WhatsApp or you can tweet in. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is, of course, the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, and where we'll be finding out where global markets are heading with Song Seng Woon, economist at CIMB Private Banking. But first, here's... Heartbreak Road by Bill Withers, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.